So first of all, I think it starts with the phone. Like imagine you have people you sit next to and they have the notification, they have the ringing. First of all, I have no notifications for anything. There's nothing, not a single one. Also, there's certain times where if I really want to focus, I will actually turn my phone to grayscale. So there's no colors.
My name is Sky, NFT survivor turned content creator.
And I'm Aiden, addicted video gamer turned content creator.
And you're listening to Kaizen, the weekly podcast where we talk about ideas, relationships, and the human condition.
In this podcast, you will learn why we get distracted, how to temper internal triggers to distraction, and how to temper external triggers to distraction. This is a fun one. My brother and I used to be absolutely distraction monkeys. Got distracted by everything, but we have come a long way. Still get distracted by a lot of stuff, but we've learned a lot from not only our own lives, but also reading phenomenal books like Indistractable. So if you are someone that struggles with distraction, you're going to get a lot of value. Hello, everyone. We're going to be talking about something that I've been getting super into recently, which is Indistractable, the book, and more broadly, the medicine of focus, which is arguably the most important skill in the digital age today. Because if you think about it, the quality of your life is determined by what you put your attention to. If you attend to bad news, drama, and TikTok all the time, your life's probably not going to be too good.
May I interject?
Yes.
I would argue that the entirety of your life is composed of what you give attention to. Everything. How you move around the day, what words you pick up on, how you see relationships, what do you even perceive? Every single thing you do for the entirety of your waking life is just based on where your attention goes. This is a skill you need to train, or it's just going to be going whichever which way.
100%. I agree. It literally is everything. Like, you know, what thoughts do you attend to, right? The goal, the vision that you have shapes the goals that you have, which shapes how you perceive the world. How you perceive the world shapes the thoughts and feelings that you have. The thoughts and feelings that you have shape how you behave. How you behave shapes how well you make progress towards your goal, which affects the whole loop again. So how you attend to the world literally impacts everything. And in this episode, I wanted to talk about what causes distraction in the first place, and then how we have... Obviously, I'm not saying we're distracting gods. Like, I still get distracted all the time. But, like, how have we, what has our relationship with distraction been like over our life? Mm-hmm. And what have we done to try and make it better, to become more focused? What do you think of that?
I like, could we, like, tear ourselves down and then just, like, share some embarrassing stories of distraction so that we can get some...
100%.
Yeah, some 100%. Authenticity in here. And then we're like, well, we changed. We solved it. We're no longer like this. And then people are like, yes, how'd you do it?
Yes, so inspired. that sounds like a great idea.
Do you have a story you want to share of when you were distractible?
Oh, that is a great question. Oh. Well, this is more of a, I have a good one. So I remember in high school, we used to take AP exams. For the viewers, these are exams that are supposedly college level that you have to study extra rigorously for, supposedly. So as we were in our junior year of high school, we were studying for, sophomore year of high school, we were studying for the AP US History exam and the AP Statistics exam in our rooms. And all of our friends and us are in a call. The way that we set up our studying session was so that every single time that we died in Fortnite, we would watch 10 minutes of a studying session of AP US statistics. It was a brilliant idea. We thought it was genius. It's like it's foolhardy. We'll study alongside having fun. You could probably guess what happened, which is we stuck to that for about 3 times. And then we just started playing the video game because the brain was like, well, you could study for 10 minutes or you just play the video game. And let me tell you, we did not do that much studying that day. Yeah. So to tie that into why we get distracted in the first place, there, like the main reason for all distraction is simply to relieve discomfort. In fact, you can apply that to almost all human motivation. It is to relieve discomfort in some way. Even the act of doing something discomforting, like David Goggins, doing tons and tons of exercise, in a way you could argue he is doing that to relieve discomfort, not because it's not discomforting, but because he would be more discomforted mentally by not pushing himself to do it than he is by doing those really hard things.
Well, he's not like, for one, he's scared he'll lose the mentality. So if he doesn't do it, he's like, okay, I would not be the hardest man on earth. And he is the hardest man on earth. Stay hard. So he has to maintain that title. So yeah, you're right. Yes. That is a deeply discomforting, I imagine, for him not to do the physical things, because the mental anguish, which would entail, is worse.
So apply that to that situation. And the reason we started playing more video games is to relieve the discomfort of having to learn about the War of 1812 in US history and memorizing every date inside of that for some reason.
It's history, eh?
Yeah.
It's American history.
It is American history.
It's the only thing we're taught.
Apparently. Tell me, what's a distraction story for you?
I guess I'll go with studying as well, but like the peak of my YouTube addiction. So I'm at the library, I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I'm going to study today. That's my mission. So I sit down, I'm studying, and I just click on my Chrome browser and I can, I type like Y into the Chrome search bar and it autofills to YouTube. And at this point, I'm so addicted that, okay, I press enter. I have no plugins, no blockers. So I see the homepage. And I'm not even going on there for a specific video. I'm not looking for a specific thing, specific inquiry, certain knowledge. It's just, oh, this looks interesting. Click there. And this was like just the height of inability to focus. So I'm like watching it 4 seconds in. Oh, I'm bored. Click on a new one. Oh, scrolling through the comments, looking at other thumbnails, back on the homepage. Maybe I've got 3 YouTubes open, scrolling through those homepages while a video plays. And like, honestly, I would say there were certain days where I could do that for 5 or 8 hours. For sure. And that was like peak, I guess, addiction to YouTube. And it wasn't really dumb stuff, in my opinion. It wasn't like gaming Let's Play. It was like I would go on a binge of Sataguru. Or I'm like, you know, people talk about Oprah Winfrey a lot. I should figure out who that is. I've heard that name before. So I go on Wikipedia and then I like watch all the motivational. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get fired up. That sort of stuff. But like deep diving without really a specific purpose. And then the entire day is sidetracked and, oh, you go down an entire rabbit hole. There were some video game Let's Plays, but that was more for trying to sleep. I was just trying to distract myself. But what I'm saying is like the YouTube stuff, I thought it was valuable content to watch, but it distracted me from my current objective, studying, or it wasn't focused, or I just didn't have the ability to even sit for the whole video at certain points. I don't really regret the subjects I watched. I thought they were good things to watch, but the way I watched it was not justified.
So what are we talking? Are you talking like you got a bag of popcorn out during these sessions and like you'd get like a soda? It'd be like the movie theater. You'd like kick back your seat, put your feet up,
I would take out my pan, put in some chicken, put in some beef, carnivore diet, 1.5. There's like a broccoli or two. So I got some veggies. And then I would chill back.
Thanks for sharing that. I really resonated with the last thing that you said about the videos themselves not being that bad, but the fact that they were distracting you being the problem, because that reminds me of a really critical idea from Indistractable, which is differentiating between tractions and distractions. Tractions are any action that brings you towards your vision. Distractions are any action that takes you away. So two people can have the exact same activity be a traction or a distraction, right? If I go on my calendar and I block off the next hour and a half tomorrow morning for going through YouTube, it's not a distraction. Like I told myself that's what I think is meaningful to be using that time with. Maybe I'm going through YouTube to like analyze the thumbnails of other videos and I want to figure out how to apply that to mine. But the difference is there was intent, right? Like I purposely said, this is what I wanted to be doing to pursue my vision. Whereas as you were describing, your YouTube binges were more like you just kind of went on without a clear purpose. You were just like going through looking for something interesting.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's more there, but I think it's a topic for another time. But
yeah,
basically, how does one not get distracted? What are you learning in this book of yours? In this holy Bible of focus.
And this holy Bible.
The sermon of attention.
I never get distracted ever again. I'm so good. I'm kidding. I still get distracted. So there's three main things that it teaches. The first is that, and each thing that it teaches, you should focus on the first thing before going to the second, before going to the third, because the first one's more in your control, then the second one's less, and then the third one's even less. So obviously you should focus on the things more in your control. And those things are tempering internal triggers, tempering external triggers, and then finally applying pre-commitments. So what internal triggers are triggers that come from inside of you, prompting you to distraction. It could be feelings of boredom, pain, hunger, right? How many times have you sat down to do something difficult? Your brain suddenly feels hungry. It's like, you should go get a snack. That's a good idea. You should go get some popcorn. Or you know what would be fun right now? What if you just like stopped doing coding and just went and watched a YouTube video? That'd be a lot more fun, wouldn't it? That's an internal trigger. So
it's like a craving of sorts.
It's a feeling that comes up prompting you to distraction or a thought. It could be a thought as well.
Okay.
Right? A feeling or a thought that comes up prompting you to distraction. And there's four steps to overcoming internal triggers. The first is to identify what internal trigger is coming up. Is it hunger? Is it pain? Is it boredom? And then step two is to record that internal trigger down. When it happened, what you were doing before it happened. And then over time, you'll be able to spot consistencies in what feeling you have from doing what, so that you'll be ready for them, right? The one of the meta ideas of the book is that forethought is the sledgehammer against distraction. Because what forethought lets you do is two things. First, you can design your environment so that the distraction is less likely to come up in the first place. And then secondly, if the distraction does come up, you're ready for it because you knew that it was coming instead of it just surprising you and getting the better.
Can you walk me through an example?
Yeah. Well, there were two more steps of the thing, and then I'll walk you through an example.
Okay.
The third step is to explore the sensation. So like get curious about it, right? Why are you feeling this way? What's causing this thought or this feeling? Do you do something physically every time that you feel it? Like twiddle your hands or get a flurry of butterfly in your stomachs? And then inside of that step, that's where you can do this exercise the guy recommends in the book called the leaves on a stream method. And what that is you take whatever feeling or thought that you're having and you imagine that it's put on a leaf inside of a stream drifting away from you. It doesn't have to be this visual that you use to get rid of the distraction, but just imagining that thought like passing away or that feeling passing away and not letting it overcome you. So those are the three steps. To walk you through an example, yesterday I was writing in the morning on some tweets from my newsletter that I was repurposing into Twitter, into tweets. And I started to get, at about the 45-minute mark, feelings of boredom because I had already written this entire newsletter beforehand, and now I was just repurposing it into tweets. So it wasn't like I was doing a new activity. It wasn't that challenging to me in comparison to writing the first time. So that was the first step, is I identified what feeling am I getting that's making me want to stop. Boredom, right? Second step is to record these triggers, like write them down inside of a journal. Now, this is more helpful if it's the first time you've ever been doing this and you don't know what characteristic feelings you'll have during an activity. For me, I've been writing for so long, like I know that boredom is going to come up at some point. So once I realized that boredom was the feeling I was having, I asked myself, like, why am I feeling this? And I realized it was because of that, the fact that I'd already written this newsletter before. It wasn't that challenging to just take tweets from it and repurpose them. So I understood once I identified that I just needed to make the activity a little more challenging. So what did I do? I tied my hands behind my back and started writing with my feet instead. I searched up on Nicholas Cole and Dickie Bush's articles about if they had any Twitter templates or tweet philosophies that are proven to do well on Twitter. And I started trying to apply those new ideas to the tweets that I was writing. So by taking these new articles and trying to apply them, I suddenly made the activity more challenging because I was learning something new. And that made the boredom go away. So I didn't even have to use the leaves on a stream method. So that's one example of running through the three steps. And you can apply that to ad infinitum, to any activity you're doing. Step one, identify. Step two, record. And then step three, explore the sensations.
I will say that the boredom one seems like a pretty clear example to me. Like I'm trying to imagine that's very common, of course. But like, let's just imagine I'm sitting here, I'm editing a video or coding or doing some studying schoolwork. And then I have a desire to, I want to stop. I don't feel like doing this anymore. I want to either grab a bite to eat or I want to go hang out with friends. Like, how do you convince yourself then? Because you just made it more difficult and you wanted to get it done. But like, let's imagine I don't even want to do the work, because a lot of people don't enjoy their work. Like, how do you refocus then?
I think the steps are still the same. Like, figure out what feeling it is that's coming up. Like in that example you just said, is it that you want to see friends? Is it that you want to get food? Figure out which of those specific things it is, because research shows that simply identifying and putting a name to a feeling or a thought that you're having diminishes its hold over you. So just doing that step is going to help make it less likely that you will fall for the distraction. And then the second thing I would figure out in that case is exactly the same as what I just said for my example, which is like, explore the sensation. Why are you feeling this way? Right? Is it because you don't feel like the activity you're doing is meaningful? Like, say you were at an internship, like the I'm not going to bring that up in the podcast. Say someone was at an internship and they were really not enjoying the work they were doing. Like, they're just doing finance stuff the entire day, accounting, and they don't find it meaningful and they're super bored. Right? In that case, like, maybe you should get distracted because it's not something that aligns with a greater vision.
But perhaps if you reframed it as, you know, this is not fun, I don't enjoy doing this, but this is a necessary sacrifice so I can save up and I can have enough of a safety net so I can pursue something else, or I can change my course, the course of my life, or this is important, this isn't fun, but it's important for these reasons. It supports X amount of people. It supports my family. It supports, there's other ways you can give it meaning outside of the activity. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Like, I think one thing that we should have said at the beginning is that in order to avoid distraction, you have to have a vision that you could be distracted against in the first place. If you're going through life without any clarity over your values or vision, and that vision could literally just be, I'm trying to figure out what my purpose is. Like, I'm trying to find something that I'm passionate about. If you don't have even that, how do you know if you're being distracted? You don't, because like, you, there's nothing to be distracted from other than finding that vision. Yeah. So that's the internal triggers, overcoming of internal triggers.
But there's a summary. So you're sitting there, you're doing work.
Yeah.
Some feeling comes in, which wants to pull you away. You identify it, you name it, because that diminishes its power. And then you can either try and do something which will mitigate it. So for you, boredom, make it more challenging, or reframe it or something to clarify its importance. Is that more or less what you're saying?
Pretty much exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly that. And that's how you overcome internal triggers. The other things that you can do internally are reframing, changing your mindset, because the mindset that you come towards life with fundamentally alters how you perceive the world and therefore act inside of it. So there's a few mindsets that Neera Eyal shares in the book that are really, really powerful. And I'm going to ask you to explain some of them, because I know that you know a decent bit about them. So the first mindset is that you should have a flexible identity rather than a rigid one. And I want you to explain what that means in terms of James Clear's Atomic Habits.
I don't think I can do a good job. I think if you get started, I'll remember.
So rigid identities are what a lot of people have. Like, I need coffee, otherwise I can't do anything. I am a morning person. I must meditate for 10 minutes in the morning, otherwise nothing else matters. I don't enjoy reading. I'm not a business person, right? These are all rigid identities that don't allow you to, they don't allow any room for being something else. Do you see what I mean now?
I see exactly what you're saying. Yeah. So I think Aiden wants me to summarize.
Cowboy.
Okay. So this is true. Like just, yeah, from hearing people talk and me at some point as well. But some people, they just, you think if things aren't a certain way, then it cannot work. You have to work out in the morning. You have to have a cup of coffee. An unnamed person, we know what we both know, needs the coffee. And it's not, it's a weak mindset, because what's unfortunate is there's going to be errors. There's going to be a day where the coffee machine breaks. There's going to be a day where you sleep through your alarm, work starts, you can't meditate. And you can't allow that to disrupt the entire day. If you allow that to happen, then everything goes off course. If everything hinges on one act or one routine, then you're not really truly adaptable. And you are the most adaptable thing on earth. You are a human. So you have Darwinian evolution to thank you. You're the most adaptable creature. And you can't limit yourself by the rigidity of this one mindset of things needing to be a certain way. So for me, for example, with the gym, it used to be like very routine. So I do work out 5-6 days a week, roughly, but it's not at the same time. It's not at 6 a.m. flat. It's not at 8 p.m. flat. It's honestly at this point very flexible. It just, okay, when can I fit this in given my other constraints? When could you fit in the meditation given what's going on with your schedule? Maybe you got class from morning until evening. Okay, today I'll meditate in the evening. It's just this expanded flexibility of how you see things and not being overly rigid with your routine.
That was a phenomenal, phenomenal summary. And yeah, I especially like the example of just the coffee machine being broken in the morning. Like you walk downstairs, you're like, must have coffee.
You're like, and then, no,
it's broken. So that's, I think it's also very like the it cannot be understated how powerful it is when you stick to a routine most days because it helps you structure your day. But then if something happens, you're able to adapt. Like remember when Alex Hormozi says in one of his videos that he would be able to work for 16 hours inside of a goddamn closet if he had to.
I think he does.
Yeah, I think he does. He does. Honestly. Yeah, he does. So that's the most adaptive creature right there. So that's one great mindset for getting over distraction. And then another one is, oh, this is so big. This is going to be fun to talk about. Stop believing in ego depletion. What is ego depletion? Ego depletion is the idea that your willpower reserves diminish over the course of the day from making decisions. This used to be a massive thing in psychology. Like, that you have to relax at the end of the day. Otherwise, you can't recharge. Like, you need to recharge your battery for tomorrow. Turns out, from follow-up studies, the only people that experience ego depletion are the ones that think that ego depletion is a thing. So, it's like a self-inflicted illness. Is you believe they get caught in the mindset like, I need this television. I need 2 hours of television at the end of the night. Otherwise, I can't work again the next
unwind.
Day. Unwind. I gotta unwind. Like if I don't relax, can't survive.
You know what I really liked? You have the chocolate story I've told before, but I tried to quit eating chocolate by having no chocolate in the house whatsoever. And then eventually I placed a chocolate bar or truffles on my desk and it took willpower to not eat those chocolate bars. And you're talking about, what is this exactly? You're essentially talking about willpower depletion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a very, very good example that Hamza talked about. He's like, okay, well, with the gym, right? Of course, we're going to train extremely hard. We're going to go as hard as we can. And then we know that over time, we're going to get stronger. But that's not how we treat willpower. We treat willpower as I'm going to use it and then it's gone. And it's just, I got to recharge it. That's not how it works. It's a muscle you train. So by having the chocolate on my desk, I'm like, okay, it takes willpower. This is extremely hard not to eat. okay, it's super difficult. I didn't do it. The next day, it's easier because the willpower, like the muscle, is trained. It becomes stronger. It's not, exactly. This is a thing that you have to treat like any other activity. You get better at it. And then it strengthens.
And from doing that chocolate exercise, your willpower muscle is bigger than your entire chest now. It's like probably the biggest muscle on your
body. It's like 20 kg. It's like easy.
When you walk up to women, you don't tell them, look at my biceps. You're like, look at my willpower muscle. And just look at that thing. Like, and they're just like, what?
Yeah, it's like a poster of Will Smith. This is my willpower.
This is...
I carry it around with me.
Never do that again.
It gives me energy.
Yeah. So this is a great mindset to get over distraction because, I mean, what's one of the biggest things that distracts us? It's the belief that, I need to be doing that. Like, I need to recharge. It's good for me. And I'm not saying like relaxation or leisure is bad. I'm just saying relaxation or leisure that is caused by the faulty belief that you absolutely need it to recharge is bad. So that's another phenomenal mindset.
We're going to dive deep into some sky theory. I think that your body adapts to what it needs to do or what it's doing. So if every night you relax on the couch for 2 hours, now the body needs it because that's what you've been doing. But if every night you don't do that, and then let's say you work or you spend that talking to your friends and family, or you're just not on your phone or reading. Like for me, at one point in my life, reading a single page was like, no, I can't. No, it's not going to happen. I was like trying to build a reading habit so I could read before bed with a Kindle. I would read like maybe 4 sentences. I'm like, this is, no. Now it's fun. Now I enjoy reading. It's like a thing I look forward to. So the body, I think, adapts to the load you give it. And if you don't give it a recharge, it's like, oh, we don't need this anymore.
Dude, I resonate so much with that. Like I used to, like 5 years ago, my body felt like it needed 2 hours of YouTube before night to like be bed ready. In fact, you know this from our childhood. I used to need that YouTube so much that when our parents took away our tablets at the end of the night, because they were like, you shouldn't be on electronics. I would literally like, I would go on like a goddamn like snake from what's that game called? Snake from
Slither.io? What?
No, not. It'll come to me. I would go in to their room, sneak around like a goddamn spy on my tiptoes, secure the tablet from the bedside, go back to my room and watch YouTube for like 2 hours before going to bed because I felt my body needed it. Yes. Oh man, the stuff that we went through before when you
the trauma of first world problems.
It's trauma of first world problems. I know it's horrible. Traumatic
childhood. I had an iPad. I got to watch YouTube.
So the last mindset. I'm gonna try and get you to explain this, unless you don't think you know it well enough. Is to reframe your life by adopting a growth mindset.
Growth.
Do you know the growth mindset?
Do you like plant a seed in your head or? I don't understand. Yeah, the growth mindset. Some people think that they'll never get better at certain things. Coding, I just can't. It just doesn't work for me. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at names. That's just not who I am. I'm bad with names. Some people, however, they have a history or they just know that every single thing that you do in your life to this day, you've learned how to do. Is that a fact? Every single thing you do on a daily basis, you at one point did not know how to do.
I mean, Sky, we're going to have the Matrix installing Neuralink chips and just learning martial arts in like 3 seconds soon.
That's also growth mindset. But the point is that some people see the world as in every single thing I do, it'll increase my ability to do it. If I go to this lesson on math, I'm going to improve my ability. It's not going to be instantaneous, but I'll be better after an hour than I was an hour previously. I'll be better at coding. I'll be better at acting. I'll be better at my job. I'll grow. It's a growth mindset. Some people don't think they can get better at certain things. They block themselves into, I'm not good with names. I'm not good with math. Maybe you can continue this.
Yeah, so you've got exactly, some people have a fixed mindset, some people have a growth mindset. And the good news is that if you don't have a growth mindset right now, you can adopt one simply by reframing failure as necessary and often better than success for learning. Because failure teaches you how to be better, whereas success doesn't really tell you anything other than you did a decent job at whatever you just did. So think of your life like a video game, like in Mario. Imagine, Sky, if you played Mario as if you only had one life and you couldn't die a single time until you got to the end of the level. How would you play? You would probably go as slowly as possible. You'd make every single jump as if it was your last. You'd still be doing this level like a year from
now. Dude's assuming I like Mario. I'd kill myself right away. I'd move on with my day.
No. Move on with your day.
Yeah. Right. I'd be very careful.
Exactly. Whereas if you were fine with failing because you knew that it would give you insight into how to go farther on the next time, you would go faster than Sonic the Hedgehog on five things of espresso. So
pretty quick.
It's pretty quick. Pretty fast. Exactly. So how does this relate to distraction? The reason it relates is one of the biggest reasons we distract ourselves is because something gets hard. And we're like, I don't like hard things. Hard things are not fun. And we delude ourselves into thinking if it's hard, it means we shouldn't be doing it because it's above our skill level. And the ironic thing is, it's only when it's hard that we actually raise our skill level. So if you have a growth mindset, it's much easier to overcome the discomfort of doing something hard because you know that's how you improve compared to having a fixed mindset. Does that make sense?
I just want to throw in a quote because I like this quote. For people who like want to improve their social skills and they want to, you know, improve that aspect of their life, I always like, it's so hard. I've got such severe social anxiety. But then I'm like, every single person you've met in your entire life was at one point a stranger. And I'm like, okay. Basically, it's connected to growth mindset.
Quote.
Yeah.
It's a good quote.
Connected to growing, recognizing past. Like you've done certain things and you can increase your ability in all aspects.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sums up the internal triggers and the mindsets. And then I think the one other thing that I do want to dive into, and then I think it would be too much information for one podcast for someone to actually take action on, is the second part of the book, which is about hacking external triggers. External triggers are things that come from outside of you. Relationships, electronics, work, stuff that you did. It's not a feeling or a thought that comes from internally. It's something outside. And these things also kept me so distracted when I was like 4 years ago before I read Deep Work. Deep Work completely changed my relationship.
Did you say 4 years? Man, I gotta write my will. I'll be back. We're so old.
We're so old. We're so old. I know.
Okay, go on.
So I used to have all notifications on. I used to, when I was playing video games, any Discord message, which is like the gaming app for the gaming social media, I would be notified while playing the video game and I would like check it. I'd be like, who was it? What did they say? And if I noticed that someone came online to play video games, I would instantaneously jump off and start playing with them if I was doing like homework or something like that. Because it's like, oh, someone's here to play Minecraft. Like during the summer months, especially, if you notice someone else was online while you're playing Minecraft, it was like a gold mine. You're like, yes, another human being to share in the discomfort avoidance activity that is Minecraft.
It's a fun game.
It is a fun game. It is a fun game. Sometimes I don't think we're completely trashing on doing anything distracting. But the whole part about tempering external stimulus is about how do we attack, not attack, how do we temper the external triggers in our life to make sure that we don't get distracted when we want to be focusing on something. So I'm curious for you, what have you done specifically that you think has, looking back, worked in tempering external distractions?
Can we wrap this up in about 5 or 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, so for me, external distractions that I've eliminated, which have helped me to focus. That's the question?
Mm-hmm.
Many things. So first of all, I think it starts with the phone. Like, imagine you have people you sit next to and they have the notification, they have the ringing. Also, it's bright screen. So there's times where, first of all, I have no notifications for anything. There's nothing, not a single one. Doesn't exist. Also, there's certain times where if I really want to focus, I will actually turn my phone to grayscale. So there's no colors. Like, I'm surprised, honestly, at how susceptible we are to visually appealing images. Even like, you know, Candy Crush, very boring game, but bright colors, like, we're monkeys. We're addicted to that. So the grayscale helps with that. That's been extremely effective with YouTube. So I do go on YouTube. It's educational. There's important videos there, but the homepage is quite distracting and I'm not going there for a specific purpose. So I actually have 8 or 9 plugins, which remove all YouTube comments. Can't see a single one. Removes all recommended videos. I can't even see the thumbnails of videos. I can only see the titles. I can't see the homepage. And I basically only go there for either specific subscriptions, of which I have 18 channels that I think are very valuable, or for a specific video. I can't see anything else. So that's my phone, my laptop. YouTube's my drug of choice, but that's been scraped. So it's very hard. You can't click if you can't see. So I removed all that. And you can look up YouTube blockers quite easily. It's a Chrome extension. Another thing is picking how I sit in an environment. So I don't like to be at home alone all day. I think it's very boring. I go to coffee shops, or I go to class or a lecture. I don't sit in the back. If you sit in the back or you sit facing other people, you see them moving, you see them checking their notifications because they have it not blocked. You see them just you just get distracted. Someone walks by, you look up, lost my train of thought. So if I'm at a coffee shop, I go to a corner, I'm facing the wall. If I go to class to work near other students, again, I'm facing the wall. I'm around people, but I'm not facing them. If I'm in a lecture, I'm in the very front row. I can't see, I can't even see the other students. I can only see the whiteboard and the lecturer. So I'm choosing what visual stimuli is coming into my environment, if that makes sense.
It does, 100%. Yeah.
Again, with sound, I'm limiting what sounds can come in. A lot of people, they work in a coffee shop or at school, like just open ears. They can hear everything. How are you supposed to focus to the maximum ability? I have headphones with me. Sometimes I'll put in my Bluetooth headphones and the headphones I'm wearing right now, which are over ear, and it makes it difficult to hear anything besides my thoughts. So I'm not distracted by noises outside the environment. Another thing you can use is binaural beats. I still do that to this day. And, but this is another subject. But basically, with circadian rhythms and your internal clock, I don't want to get too far into this, but it can be optimal to work for an hour and a half block and then take a short 10-minute break, roughly. So for an hour and a half, I'll play these binaural beats, which is a certain frequency. It's just like a constant drumming sound. You can find it if you go on YouTube, search binaural beats studying. Alpha or beta frequency or something. And I play that the whole time. It's not lyrics. It's not music. It's not instrumental. It's just a constant drumming, which focuses your attention. The last thing I'll mention is in regards to where I look in the actual environment. I try to focus on my vision, that is, on exactly what I'm working on. So if it's a laptop and I have to write or I have to edit, I try and pretty much look only at the laptop, directly facing forward, or if I'm in class, directly facing forward, look at where my attention needs to be for the given activity to maximize the focus on that. Because if you're looking around, then, I mean, your brain attends to what you're looking at, so you get distracted. I gave you quite a bit there.
Yeah. Dude, that's sick. Especially, I loved the one about the coffee shop and the lecture hall, because that is a bit of a meta idea in it, which is if you see everyone else falling for distraction, way easier to fall for distraction yourself. Like if you're at a coffee shop, every single person you see is like on their phone, every notification they get shows up. Yeah. It's way easier to be like, oh, this is okay. Like, that's fine. But if you're facing the wall, that's not going to happen. So I really like that idea. Yeah. So to like summarize, to extract like the main ideas from what you just said, the biggest external triggers that you can try and temper are your phone, your computer, your whatever other electronics, like your tablet, your watch, whatever. Just turn off all notifications. Figure out how to diminish the amount of notifications on like desktop stuff like YouTube and Reddit, whatever social medias you use. And then also relationships can be a huge distraction. So I think something you didn't go into that is also important is like setting boundaries in your relationships,
mm-hmm.
like making sure people know when you're available, when you're not available, what type of interactions you like having. Like I know for you, you're a very unique relationship to me, not only because like you're one of my best friends, but also because my interactions with you are very different from everyone else. First of all, you hate texting. like you and I don't like texting that much either, but like you are out of everyone I know, one of the you despise it. So I know I'm not going to text you for meaningful interaction. And I don't, because you've made that clear, which mm-hmm. is a good thing that you've made that clear. And I also know that like you don't want to call every day, which I don't either. Like you want to call twice a week. So you've set boundaries for that as well, mm-hmm. which is good. And then for me, you probably know that I think the mornings are sacred. So let that stand as a testament to how important I find this podcast, that 7:15 a.m., this cursed hour.
Crack of dawn.
This crack
of dawn. Yeah, you wake up early. You wake up at like 5 a.m. So.
No, today I woke up later. You sent me a text in WhatsApp. You were like, yo, at 7:07, where are you? And like, I had woken up before that. I had already done a bit, but like, I had just got my computer set up. I was like, ugh. So
you look chipper.
Yeah.
You woke up.
I am chipper. I am energetic without coffee. Proud to say. Yeah. So I think those are the main external. Energetic without coffee.
That's a good shirt.
That would be a good shirt. So those are all the external triggers. I think you do one last like 1 minute, 2 minute summary with some action items, and then we can call it a day.
Vision board. So when you're doing your activity and then you get distracted or you get bored or you get hungry or you go to the bathroom, just think about why that is. If you can mitigate it while you're there, can you alleviate the boredom by making the task more fun, more challenging? Or can you rationalize whatever discomfort there is by giving meaning and purpose to what you're doing? Does it help you in some other aim? In regards to your physical environment, I'm going to throw one more thing in. Clean your room, Jordan Peterson. Your room is a reflection of your mind. But keep your physical environment clean. Keep it clear. As Aiden just said, control what's coming in. Notifications, inputs, visual stimuli, auditory. Make sure it's assisting you in your task. You can train your willpower. So it's too hard. I can't study for this long. I can't work for this long. It's a skill you can train like any other muscle. You can increase your ability to do it, how long you can do it, how well, how efficient, how effective. Have a growth mindset. Don't be too rigid in how you think. So if you label yourself, first of all, what you tell yourself becomes true. Self-hypnosis. So if you tell yourself constantly, I just can't remember names. I just can't do it. I just can't do math. It's not possible. It's, you know, at a certain point, our body wants to maintain an internal truth. We want to be in alignment with what we say, and it almost makes it true. So if you tell yourself, oh, I am good with names. Honestly, I truly believe given enough time, you'll become better at names simply through that. Just be more flexible in how you think. I think those are the majority of what we discussed.
Yeah. Yeah, you got pretty much all of it. Only other thing I would say is adopt a growth mindset inside of your life. So don't shudder from failure. Realize failure actually helps you build more skills and that you can increase your skills in areas that you have previously thought you would never be able to.
Like every master was once a beginner.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we have for an action item for anyone listening, I would say like pick one external trigger, like your phone. Actually, no, pick your phone. Like just all right. That's the biggest
every
one.
Single notification. I don't care. Every single one.
Single notification. If you come in the comments of this podcast episode, you're like, but Aiden, what if a meteor shower comes from the sky onto my parents' house and they need to call me in case they need help? First of all, what is the likelihood of that happening? And second of all, then they call you and you pick up. Yeah. It's
the
not
calls
like
still go through.
What do you think they are? Do you think they're going to message you? Hey, son or daughter, I am in a meteor shower. Need help. No
snap,
one's going to do
snap
that.
Snap sent.
Right?
Instagram message. Well,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Instagram. I don't
rest
no. And then also for internal triggers, adopt the mindsets that we talked about. And the next time that you're distracted, go through those three steps of internal
overcoming. And you should block YouTube. You should get recommended blocked. That's the truth. This is the truth.
Is it truth? A truth?
Yep.
Okay. And then you shall become indistractable. Yes. This has been a phenomenal podcast. This has been Sky and Aiden, Kaizen podcast. We hope you have a phenomenal rest of your night, day.
One of us does.
Evening. I don't know when you're watching this. Hopefully not at 3 a.m. in the morning. And ka-chow.